You've heard of the Goddess of Spring and Old Man Winter, of course. They're the characters that serve as the physical embodiments of the seasons they're named for. The Goddess of Spring with her flowing dress and flower garland crown, often accompanied by birds. Old Man Winter with his long white beard and frosty breath. Less familiar are figures like Anya, the goddess of summer in Celtic lore, or Thinnaporinand, the goddess of autumn from Greek myth. There are many others like them from cultures all around the world, whether they're some kind of deity, or spirit, or character. There's one in particular from ancient Slavic mythology, a wintertime character who may have remained lesser known to the broader world, a regional folkloric figure, had it not been for a series of events that started in the 19th century, continued into the early 20th with the formation of the Soviet Union, and continues on today. Dead Morose, or Grandfather Frost, went from folktale to fairy tale, from beloved symbol of Christmas to exile, and then back to beloved symbol, all in surprisingly short order. It's a story of ups and downs set against the backdrop of a violent social and political revolution, and which resulted in a strange stint as the Soviet Santa Claus. I'm Brian Earle. This is Christmas Past. Dead Morose, and I know that's not an authentically Russian pronunciation, came from the same sort of folkloric tradition that brought us the images of Father Christmas and the modern version of Santa Claus. If you squint, you could almost mistake him for Santa. Fur suit, yes. Long, flowing white beard, yes. But there are a few differences. His fur suit is one of long robes, often blue and white. His overall look suggests some kind of wizard-like character. He carries an ornate staff. And though he gets around on a sleigh, his is different from Santa's.
He drives a troika, which is a traditional Russian chariot with three horses. That's why it's called a troika, because there are three.
That's Karen Patrone. She's a professor of Russian and Soviet history at the University of Kentucky. She's also the author of Life Has Become More Joyous, Comrades, Celebrations in the Time of Stalin. And that Russian troika is a touch that came later. We'll get to that. But let's begin at the beginning. In contrast to Santa Claus, whose story originates from a real person, the historical Saint Nicholas, and, at least for a time, had a direct religious connection, Dead Morose has always been purely mythological. He was a god, and often a cruel and capricious one at that. It was said that he could freeze people and landscapes by simply snapping his fingers. He had no special connection to Christmas, and he certainly wasn't a Santa-like magical gift-bringer. But then, along came the 18th and 19th centuries, and with them, the Romantic era. This was an artistic and intellectual movement in response to the Enlightenment and the Industrial Revolution. The emphasis of the movement was on imagination and appreciation of nature in society and culture. And part of how this played out in literature was authors taking regional folk beliefs and working them into national literature. You're already familiar with how this played out in Germany, where the brothers Grimm collected German folktales and published them as Grimm's Fairy Tales in 1812. Well, the same was going on in Russia with the figure of Dead Morose.
Many authors are really interested in the folk and the national. And so they start to look at sources of legends that they then write into literature. These stories are coming out of a kind of, you know, sort of pre-Christian pagan era. They get translated into folktales and then translated into sort of national culture.
So, a few things started to happen. In Russia, Dead Morose becomes increasingly connected with Christmas, which, and this will come up again later, is not on December 25th in Russia, but rather on January 7th in accordance to the Julian calendar. And that Christmas connection is cultural, not religious. In fact, the Russian Orthodox Church considered him a pagan god. He begins taking on gift-bringing duties. He gets his sleigh, or troika in this case. He basically becomes a copy of St. Nicholas. And like St. Nicholas, who often traveled with a companion, whether it was Black Pete, Krampus, Belsnickel, or one of many others, so too did Dead Morose get his own. Eventually. But first came the formation of the Soviet Union in the early 1920s.
And they are explicitly an atheist state that is trying to get rid of all religious traffic. So the Soviet state is explicitly trying to remove religion as a cultural influence.
Now again, Dead Morose is not a figure with religious origins like St. Nicholas is. But as Christmas was wiped out, people were seeing a lot less of Dead Morose.
He is identified as someone who is part of that old world who's promoting religion, promoting Christmas as a holiday, rather than the socialist holidays.
Under Stalin's rule, farmers had to give up their land to the state. It was called collectivizing. Those who resisted were deported to Siberia. And somehow, Ded Morose was dragged into all of this, called out as a symbol of these resistors. In 1928, he was banished from Soviet life.
Essentially, Ded Morose was named an enemy. During this collectivization moment. A kulak is a rich peasant who doesn't want to go into the collective farm, and Ded Morose was theoretically his friend.
A lot of people resisted collectivization. Millions of families were sent to Siberia, and by the late 20s and early 30s, it was taking a seriously grim toll.
Often the most successful farmers were the ones who were least interested in collectivizing. Then farming hit a very serious trouble, and there was a combination of crop failure and human error that led to mass starvation.
At least 5 million people died as a result, an immense tragedy, and a massive problem for Stalin. So after years of deeply unpopular policy and devastation, he needed a change of plans.
In the 1930s, they're trying to sort of reestablish the Soviet Union as an attractive state that other people from other countries would want to emulate. Starting in 1934-1935, Stalinist propaganda began to reimagine the Soviet Union as a place filled with celebrations.
Of course, there couldn't be any religious celebrations, so that ruled out Christmas. But New Year's celebrations? Sure, why not?
New Year's Day was always a kind of purely celebratory holiday, aimed at children, but also aimed at fun. There were carnivals and balls for adults as well. So because it was apolitical, it was really the only apolitical holiday, then it really took off and was genuinely popular across the whole Soviet period. So when the Soviet Union fell, the holiday did not. The holiday continued, and Ded Morose continued in popularity.
And of course, every celebration needs its own symbols and decorations. So they say,
hey, you know what? The Christmas tree, which was also banned in 1928, the Christmas tree is not so bad. It isn't really religious. It's a tree. It doesn't have anything to do with Christmas.
The New Year's tree became part of the Soviet celebration. Families would put up a fir tree, decorate it, typically with nature-themed items, play games, sing songs, give gifts. If this is starting to sound an awful lot like Christmas, well, perhaps the finishing touch was to bring Ded Morose back on the scene, just a short 7 years after he was labeled an enemy and exiled, this time brought back as a Santa-like gift-bringer and the public face of the celebration. He delivered gifts on the morning of January 1st.
As time goes on, and as New Year's Day and New Year's Eve become very important Soviet holidays, then Ded Morose becomes more and more sort of a popular cultural figure. It's part of the Sovietization of the holiday.
And this is the part where he finally gets that travel companion. Snegorochka, or the Snow Maiden, was another character from 19th century fairy tales. She never had any particular connection to Ded Morose or any celebration, but suddenly she was pictured with Ded Morose and alternately described as either her niece or granddaughter. Now, remember, in Russia, Christmas is on January 7th. So the idea of a secular celebration on January 1st, in theory, would steal Christmas's thunder. In practice, though, wink, wink, people were basically celebrating Christmas.
People loved it. There's an element of resistance in, sort of people's imagining of the holiday, where it's sort of an opening where they say, yeah, we're celebrating New Year's, but they're really also using the Christmas tree to celebrate Christmas.
When communism began to fall across Europe in the late 80s, Ded Morose fell out of favor in satellite states like Bulgaria and Romania. They brought back their old versions of Santa Claus. Today, in Russia, Orthodoxy is back. And although he and Santa Claus now coexist in Russia, Ded Morose is still the most popular gift bringer.
Ded Morose is as popular today as he was in the Soviet times, and he's been absolutely embraced as an ideal of Russian culture by the very Russian nationalist Putin government. They even have something like NORAD tracking Ded Morose as he's coming to give presents. The holiday where Ded Morose is most clearly associated is New Year's Day. So they're celebrating both New Year's Day and Orthodox Christmas. It's a conglomeration. And that whole week is essentially a holiday week going from New Year's Day to Orthodox Christmas.
It must have been something else to live through such a turbulent time and one where Christmas was so drastically altered. Perhaps the only thing from recent history that comes close to that is the COVID pandemic. We saw it change Christmas in ways large and small, good and bad. And for better or worse, it created the conditions for some unique Christmas memories, like this one from Clara in Australia.
Being raised in the Northern Hemisphere, my brain has never stopped thinking, when the cold comes, it must be Christmas time. And there are lots of Christmas in July offerings here. We would have a Christmas in July lunch or go out to a restaurant each year, but during the pandemic, it became so much more. Melbourne was one of the most lockdown cities in the world. We had just come out of a 45-day lockdown in May, thinking, woohoo, glad that's over. Then July comes and we are locked right back down. I'm a homebody, so for me personally, it was okay, but it was really hard on my kids, especially my son who struggled, and we had some friends who were having a really hard time mentally with the whole thing. So I'm a member of the original Christmas Decorating Australia Facebook group. The admins and group members were working overtime posting cute crafting ideas and fun Christmas recipes. This group became like my own personal anti-MAME. We Need a Little Christmas was running on loop in my head. So out came the tree, but instead of our usual ornaments, we made everything that went on the tree. We took all of the ideas from the Christmas decorating group, dried out orange slices, made paper chains, glitter houses, and made these little cookie houses using Tim Tams, which are a classic Australian chocolate biscuit. We made treats and packed up Christmas in July packages for our friends and neighbors that we secretly dropped on porches. We even made a little quarantine box so our elf on the shelf could visit safely. All these ideas from this decorating group. It made my kids happy and gave us lots of fun things to do together in a very strange time. I'll forever be grateful to this little group of virtual friends who gave my family a little bit of Christmas when we needed it most.
Clara is the host of The Festivity Files, a new podcast discussing traditions and cultural celebrations that take place all around Australia. Find it wherever you find podcasts. Well, everyone, this Christmas season is starting to wind down,
but I've got plenty left in store for you, and I'm looking forward to sharing the rest of the season with you all the way up till Christmas Day. Christmas Past is produced in wonderful Willow Glen, California, by yours truly, Brian Earle.
Thank you so much to Karen Patrone. Check the show notes for a link to her book, Life Has Become More Joyous, Comrades. Thanks also to Clara and Australia, and as always, thank you for listening.
You can drop me a line during the Christmas season or any time of year at christmaspastpodcast@gmail.com, or you can always connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And join our private Christmas Past Facebook group if you haven't yet. And if you're really feeling the Christmas spirit, why not help more people discover this show? It's as simple as telling a friend about it or leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. If you do leave a review, I'll send you a Christmas Past sticker, and a handwritten Christmas card is my way of saying thanks. Reach out for details, and until we meet again, may your days be merry and bright.